As a CEO or entrepreneurial leader, you want to focus on overall vision, alignment, and running a great business. You want your business to run efficiently with less effort and little pain. Welcome to Operationally Speaking with Sergio Samel. Sergio and his very special guests will give you the tools to run your business well and gain the momentum to break through to the next level. Now, here is your host, Sergio Samel.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to episode number 16 of Operationally Speaking, a show exclusively dedicated to the art and science of operating entrepreneurial businesses. I am Sergio Samel, your host, and I am the principal EOS implementer at Get Business Momentum, where we help owners and CEOs of small to mid-sized entrepreneurial companies like yours get what you want out of your business by implementing a well-proven, complete system for operating your company. So last week, I spent this time with Sean Campbell, CEO of Cascade Insights. Sean and I talked about working on your business, and in particular about the inflection point in the evolution of an entrepreneurial business where the leaders of the business must start moving away from working exclusively in the business, how to do it, and what the implications are on various components of the organization. Now, if you missed that episode, you can listen to it on demand here on the Voice America Business Channel, as well as wherever you listen to podcasts, such as on iTunes and Stitcher. And now, let me introduce my great, great guest today, Josh Patrick. Josh, you are a serial entrepreneur, maybe the epitome of a serial entrepreneur. You started your first real business at 24, as you say, a food service and vending company with initially one and a half employees. And by the time you sold the business in 1995, it had grown to 90 employees and about $6.5 million in revenues. Your second venture has been in the wealth management and consulting business, where you started Stage 2 Planning Partners and the sustainable business. You mentioned, Josh, that you have read over 2,000 business books, taught over 200 companies strategic, financial, and people management skills, and have attended over 150 business development programs. So you like to think that there is no business strategic activity that you don't at least have enough knowledge on to have a reasonable conversation. And indeed, you have created several programs that help private business owners create an economically and personally sustainable business. Some of them are the objective review, the stage two hiring process, and the financial freedom project. Josh, I'm not only delighted, but really, truly honored to have you on the Operationally Speaking show. So let me start with just a quick question as a kind of putting a frame around this. So how did you and I first connect?
I think you were looking for podcast guests through Andrew's newsletter he puts out once a week.
That's correct. So I usually try to start some of these shows with a little bit of levity. Business is often taken to be too serious for our own good. So, Josh, do you have a favorite business anecdote or even a joke that you can share?
Well, when I was, I think probably 27, 28 years old, I did my first public talk. It was at a National Vending Association meeting, and my father decided to come out with me to watch me talk. And afterwards, he said, that was a pretty good talk, but you really shouldn't tell jokes because you're not funny. So I guess I can't tell you a joke because according to my father, I'm not funny. So there you are.
All right. That's okay. But you just did tell us a funny business anecdote. And you think that, you know, whatever your father thought of you many, many years ago has basically marked you for the rest of your life, right?
No, I've never been a good, joke teller. I can't even remember jokes, much less tell them.
Yeah.
So unless a joke involves something that I've done stupid and there's thousands of those, then I'm not going to be very funny.
Well, you sound like she's not with us anymore. But my mother used to be in the same category. I mean, she couldn't tell a joke if her life depended on it. So one other thing that I'm always very interested in when I talk to somebody new to my life, and I ask the same question of everybody who comes on this show, is how did they get to be who they are today? So, Josh, is there like an event or force or maybe a person in the early stages of your life that has had the strongest influence on you becoming who you are today?
Well, it's always your parents, I think. Okay. I grew up in a family business, so I've been around business as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was 7 years old, I used to work in my father's tobacco wholesaling warehouse. And got paid a nickel a case of a candy on the shelves. So I guess, you know, being in a smaller business has been part of my DNA and my family's DNA for generations. So it's not a real big stretch to say, well, gee, you've sort of been interested in the business. And then because I was such a bad business person when I started, if I didn't learn stuff along the way, I would have been bankrupt by the time I was 27, 28. So that's part of the reason why I've read so many books, been to so many programs. And you know, when I was pretty young, I figured out that the best way to learn something was to volunteer to teach it. Mm-hmm. So I would often volunteer to teach courses I had no idea how to do, and then I'd go out and learn it and teach it. So that's served me pretty well over the years.
Actually, I am entirely in totally resonance with you. I actually do almost the same thing. The way I learn personally is actually I try to teach that thing to somebody else, and I found in my experience to be an excellent method. So I'm very happy to hear that we are sort of the same kin in that respect. So tell us a little bit, just a minute or two, about your current business or businesses, what their purposes are, and essentially what are they best at?
Well, my consulting business, the sustainable business, purpose is to help private business owners create a personally and economically sustainable business. And there's five pieces to that. You want to have a clear sense of values of who you are. You want to make yourself operationally irrelevant in your business. You want to systematize your business. You need to have a recurring revenue stream. And your business has to be profitable enough to fill the four areas of profitability, which is lifestyle for the owner, a safety fund or an emergency fund for the business, money for growth because no bank will fund all your growth, and finally, enough money to appropriately fund a qualified retirement plan because your business by itself likely won't get you to where you're going. On our wealth management side, the purpose of our business is to help make our clients' lives better. And that business is Stage 2 Planning Partners.
I see. And by better, you mean what specifically?
Well, whatever better means for the client.
I see. All right. So that makes sense. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's it.
Oh, all right. So you mentioned actually when you enumerated these four areas about the first business, you mentioned as the second one being or becoming operationally irrelevant. And we decided jointly that that's actually the main theme of our conversation today, the secrets of our operational irrelevance. But before we get to the secrets, let's start with the basics. So what do you mean really by operational irrelevance? So what is it really? And also, Why should we care? Why is it important?
Well, we'll start off with what it is. Operational relevance means you're not involved at all in the day-to-day operations of your business or delivery of services that your business provides. Why should you care is if you ever want to leave your business and have somebody else take it over, and my definition of a sustainable business is a business that lasts for more than one generation, you have to get out of the way. Because as much as you might think that you are like the most important person in the world, a buyer could care less of who you are. In fact, the more involved you are in the business, the less likely you're ever going to be able to sell it.
And how does that actually relate in a sense to, a concept that was, I think, pioneered, if I'm not mistaken, by Michael Gerber about 25, 30 years ago in his original well-celebrated book, The E-Myth, or E-Myth Revisited in its mm-hmm. later editions. How does that relate to what Michael Gerber taught us? Is it a kind of a variation of it or something very different?
Not really. I mean, Michael Gerber really talks about systematizing the business. Mm-hmm. He doesn't talk about making yourself operationally irrelevant. Although in his later books he has, in his later writing he has, but the original E-Myth was really around how to systematize a business. And my complaint with that book when it came mm-hmm. out was he really never covered what I thought was important, which was how do you create a passive owner? I think that there's a lot of really good stuff in the E-Myth and the E-Myth Revisited. My challenge with the E-Myth and all the E-Myth consultants I've run across over the years, it's too much. You know, if you ask a private, I know that you're an EOS consultant, yes. And you would probably agree that less is more.
Absolutely.
And with the E-Myth, Gerber's sense is more is more. I have yet to meet any private business owner who is going to go into the detail, unless you're an engineer, and engineers and I don't work well together, so unless you're an engineer, you're not going to go into that level of detail because that's not the DNA of what a private business owner is. Now, Gerber was talking to what he called the technician that had the entrepreneurial cramp, which I love. I think it's a great term.
Right.
And if he's talking to engineers, which is what I think he is, then all the detail that he recommends you do is great, except that that entrepreneur is going to get stuck in the weeds and never take a look at the bigger picture.
Exactly. So that's absolutely correct. And of course, you call them engineers. I come from the perspective of, for example, what the Kolbe assessment tells us about how people go about doing things. And there is one dimension of a modus operandi there called fact finders. So in the Kolbe world, those kinds of people are usually referred to as fact finders or initiating fact finders, where, you know, the details and all the pieces of the data are extremely important to them. So we are going to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to move from the what and why of operational irrelevance to the how. So let's take a couple minutes break and we'll be right back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serge Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
Tune in to the Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, with co-hosts Ron Baker and Ed Kless. Ron and Ed will show you how to recognize that wealth is created by intellectual capital. It's all in the possibilities that we can create and that are created for us. These possibilities are destined to be discovered by human imagination and through the service of others, creating a brighter future for all of us. The Soul of Enterprise is heard live every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel, and simulcast at the same time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Sergio Semel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Sergio Semel, your host, and I'm sitting here with Josh Patrick, creator of the Stage 2 Hiring Process and the Financial Freedom Project. So, Josh, during this little break, you are sharing with me something that was really, really important relative to my bringing into the picture the Colby way of looking at a person's kind of cognitive or doing profile. And you said something that was really, really, you know, point, hitting on the head. So I'd love you if you could actually share that with our listeners.
Oh, sure. In my experience with working with the Colby Index, and I've been doing that for, I don't know, 15, 18 years now, mm-hmm. What I find is that fact finders often do too much research, but they're not the people that get stuck in the weeds. I mean, they can get stuck in the weeds. Mm-hmm. But the people who really get stuck in the weeds are the people who are initiating follow-throughs, which means that they like systems and they like complicated systems.
Right.
And often they'll take something, and these are the people who will be very, very tied into Michael Gerber's thoughts around how a business should be run, is that they will put together programs that have 15, 20 steps to them when they can be done with one, two, or three steps. And as a result, they get stuck in the weeds because they spend too much time trying to get things perfect instead of good enough.
Right. So essentially kind of overly structuring stuff, right?
Yes. Yes.
Exactly.
And the truth is private businesses are all starved in one thing, and that's economic and time resources. So if you're not looking at systems that short circuit having every single step, then you're likely going to not get a whole lot done because there just aren't enough resources to do it.
Exactly. So let's try to slowly shift now to the kind of how part of of attaining this operational irrelevance. So, of course, getting out of the way means that whatever we do, we need to delegate, all right? And since you are very, very familiar with the Entrepreneurial Operating System model or EOS model, I'm going to use a term from there, or at one of the EOS tools, which is delegate and elevate. So it's basically delegating stuff so you can elevate yourself in your strengths or your area of strengths. So how does one decide what to delegate and to whom, and extremely importantly, when?
Well, you probably want to start off with telling yourself the truth. And a lot of private business owners, if you ask them what are they good at or what are they bad at, they're not really going to tell you what they're either very well, because they haven't really thought about it. And part of the reason is they don't really tell themselves the truth about what it is a unique ability, using Dan Sullivan's term, and Dan Sullivan is a guy who thinks he coined that term, although I'm not sure that's true. But at any rate, whatever your unique ability is, that's what you should be focusing on. There's a great book by the Gallup guys called Now Discover Your Strengths. Mm-hmm. And it's called Strengths Finders. And I highly recommend people always do the Strengths Finder routine, because that helps you figure out what you're good at. And I think the delegation is you delegate everything you're not good at, and you only keep things for yourself that you're world class at. And using the Strength Finder sort of thought process, what I like to tell people to do is, here's what I want you to do. I want you to magnify your strengths, and I want you to manage your weaknesses. And managing your weaknesses is where delegation really comes in. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're really going to build a sustainable business, you eventually have to delegate all tactical activities in the business, even if it's something you're world-class at, because, again, a potential next owner of your business doesn't want you. They want your business. They want your cash flow. They want your systems. They want your people, but they don't want you. Mm-hmm. So you have to realize that delegation, I mean, you start off with delegating with what you're not good at. And you find people who are good at it and let them be great, and you just manage the process. So that's the first place I would start.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find is that most private business owners or most private businesses never grow past 25 employees. I'll give you a couple of statistics around businesses, which I think are really pretty interesting. There's approximately 28 million businesses in the United States. Only 6 million out of that 28 million have any employees at all. 300,000 of those businesses do more than $5 million in sales. And 150,000 of those businesses do more than $10 million in sales. So what that tells me is that about 99% of all private business owners have not learned how to delegate. And I think there's two reasons around that. The first reason is they haven't learned how to trust their employees. And the second, they haven't learned how to let their employees make mistakes and learn from those. So the first thing, let's talk about trust for a second, because I think that's a hugely big deal.
Absolutely.
As much as we like to think that we want to trust people, we as human beings are relatively untrusting and skeptical. Right. And there's good reasons for that, because we've all been burned in our life. So there's a guy named
especially serial entrepreneurs.
I would say pretty much everybody. But serial entrepreneurs definitely have. So here you are. There's a guy named Charles Green. I can't remember who his co-author is, but they wrote a great book called The Trusted Advisor. And in The Trusted Advisor, if you just Google, by the way, Trusted Advisor, you'll get this formula, which is called the trust formula. I use this all the time. Basically, it's competence plus reliability plus intimacy divided by self-interest tells you how much you're going to be trusted. So where does that trust formula fall down with owners and their employees? Well, it falls down in two areas. One is, the big one is competence. Is the person you're delegating to competent? And if the answer is no, then you have to find somebody who is competent. And often the truth is the people who work in your company, and I think this is an EOS thing, mm-hmm. is that we don't delegate. We don't really delegate. What we do is we have a bunch of helpers around us doing our job.
Right.
And we need to get past the helper stage to where you really have somebody independently doing work on their own. If you're not doing that, you're just not going to get people to be, you're not going to delegate. That's all there is to it. So if there's not competence, then you're doing it. There's another piece to the delegation also, which is when you delegate, I have my first mentors, a guy named Shields Harvey, great guy from North Carolina, and Shields used to say, he had this thing called EIA. And EIA stands for expect, inspect, accept, which was how to delegate. You set a clear expectation, you inspect to make sure that what you delegated was actually done properly, and then you accept the work, or if it's not done right, you have to not accept the work and start all over again. Now, what I find is a lot of private business owners are pretty good at setting expectations. They are absolutely terrible at inspecting. So they don't delegate, they abdicate.
Right.
And if you don't have the discipline to go back and check on the work that you've asked somebody else to do, I can almost promise you that it's not going to get done correctly. And what happens is, and then this has happened with me, this could have been my story, and I've heard this hundreds of times now, where I said, well, you know, I can't delegate. I tried and it didn't work. And the only reason it didn't work was because the business owner never got around to actually going back and checking on the work to make sure it was done properly. So they go back 3 weeks later instead of 1 day or 2 days or 3 days later, and nothing has been done. And the only thing that happens is they get very frustrated and said, well, that can't be done, so I have to do it all myself.
Right.
So instead of looking in the mirror and say, what could I have done differently, which comes into mistakes, they kind of plow through and say, well, it's that person's fault. Exactly. I'm a big fan of W. Edwards Deming. In fact, mm-hmm. in 1980, early 80s, we put a TQM system in our vending company. And I'm a big fan of the 14 points that Deming's came out with. W. Edwards Deming's father of quality control, in case we have younger listeners who
exactly.
can't remember what the 80s were, or the 70s or 60s, or in Deming's case, the 30s.
Exactly. And they didn't know that it all started in Japan, right?
Well, it actually started here in World War II.
Right.
And then American manufacturers didn't want to keep working with Deming because he's a bit of a cantankerous guy.
Right.
And then he went to Japan and became a demigod.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, in there, in part of Deming's 14 points is don't blame the person, blame the system. And business owners love to blame their employees instead of looking in the mirror and saying, what is wrong with our systems and what can we correct? And part of that is personal responsibility. We don't do a great job of taking personal responsibility, especially when things go wrong. So that's one piece of there. Then the other side of the reason is the culture of mistakes. And mistakes are something which we all make. And now here's the question. Are you going to admit that you make mistakes, or are you going to pretend that you never make mistakes? And it's just other people make mistakes, and if they didn't make mistakes, then life would be wonderful. The truth is, you make mistakes, and they make mistakes. So here's the question you want to ask yourself every time a mistake is made, or ask the person who made the mistake. What is it that you learned? And if you can't get a good answer for that question, your mistake has just been a gigantic waste of time.
That is so, so true. So we need to take another quick break in just a few seconds. But when we get back, I'd like to continue this conversation about delegation in a couple of directions, because I believe it's so important, and it's such, as you put it, Josh, it's such a limiting factor to the growth of private businesses. So let's take a break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain, so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serge Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com, or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
How is your work-life balance? In most businesses, no matter where you are positioned, there is always room for improvement. If you're an executive, learn insight about your business. Are you an employee? Learn how to better work with your team. Even if you're not in business, you can learn where your strengths and weaknesses can be played to their best potential. The Work-Life Balance with host Rick Morris can be heard live every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Sergio Samel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Sergio Samel, your host, and I'm sitting here again with Josh Patrick, creator of the Stage 2 Hiring Process and the Financial Freedom Project. So, Josh, let's continue this conversation about delegation. As I said before the break, delegation is such an important component of any private business or entrepreneurial business's potential for growth. So I have a question for you. You said that we start delegating the stuff that we are not good at. Well, what about the stuff that we are actually very good at, but we hate doing?
You know, I got to tell you, I have rarely run across anybody who is really good at stuff they hate doing. Mm. What I think you should do, if you hate doing something, number one, you should delegate it, obviously, because it's not in your sweet spot. But I also would, again, look at myself in the mirror and tell myself the truth that I'm really not very good at it. I mean, I might hate things, and I've gotten to be all the way to being mediocre. Let me give you an example of this, and it's not really a business example, but it was when I was a kid. When I was, I think, probably in third or fourth grade, you go through those music tests where you're tested for your music aptitude. And my test was tone deaf with no rhythmic sense. Mm. I really wanted to be in the band. So the band director was our neighbor. So the band, my mother went to the band director. I said, okay, my son really wants to be in the band. And he went, okay, well, in elementary school, the bands are horrendous anyhow.
Right.
The truth is, I practiced really hard. I became a trombonist, practiced really hard. I became first seat in the area all-state band when I was a sophomore in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you would think that I was a pretty good musician. Now, compared to the people who worked hard or didn't work hard, I probably was a pretty good musician. But the truth was, if I ever told myself the truth, and I have for years since then, is I really wasn't a good musician. I was a mediocre musician who had worked really hard to become a high-functioning mediocre musician.
Right.
So you can get awfully far in the world with ambition. You know, one of my father's great sayings is you're limited by two things in this life. You're limited by your ability and your ambition. And if I have a choice of only one, I'm going to take ambition over ability. Because if I have lots of ability and I don't work hard at it, I'm never going to get very good. You still have to practice. But if I have ability, practice becomes not effortless, but much less effort.
Right.
So if you're doing something you hate, there's a pretty good chance you're really not world class at it. And going back to the now discover your strengths sort of conversation,
yes.
Why would you ever want to try to become the best mediocre person you can be? Manage those weaknesses, magnify your strengths. Are you familiar with the management concept called appreciative inquiry?
Not personally. Tell us.
Okay, appreciative inquiry is a really interesting way to manage a business. It's actually one of my favorite things to do. Appreciative inquiry very basically says, instead of trying to fix what's wrong in your business, why don't you manage what's wrong and magnify what's right?
Mm.
And if you really think about that, the businesses who really do interesting things and the businesses that actually take advantage of opportunities, they focus on what's working. They don't focus on what's not working. Let me give you a real live example. Again, this comes back from my vending days.
Right.
When I first got into the vending business, you've probably seen these glass front snack machines with 40 different types of potato chips and candies and all that sort of stuff.
Of course.
Well, we used to have 200 different SKUs in our warehouse. And we thought that our route drivers used to like to go through and shop and pick out which items they wanted. And then one day, one of my clients who happened to be a grocery store said, "You're an idiot. Why are you letting your drivers choose what goes in the machine? You should be choosing." Well, I didn't quite buy that. So, but what I did do is we ended up taking our SKUs from 100 down, 200 down to 100. And, our drivers got happier. And then we took our SKUs from 100 down to 75 and to 50. We eventually got it down to 18 to 20. And we also told the drivers exactly what went in each row of the vending machines. And instead of putting one row of Snickers in, we would put three rows of Snickers in and guarantee we never sold out. Now, that was a process that took 3 or 4 or 5 years. I don't remember. But we weren't focusing on what didn't work. We were focusing on what worked, and we made these adjustments based on what was working and what we could make better. And that's a pretty good example, in my opinion, of focusing on what's making us better, which got a much better return for us than fixing what was wrong. You know, for example, we went from having an average service, dollars per service, which is every time the route driver opened the door in that vending machine, how much merchandise did they put in there, meaning how much merchandise did we sell, from around $40 per service up to $140 per service. Now, that's an incredible result. I would have never gotten that result just focusing on, oh, gee, we're only getting $40 per service. Maybe I'll get $43.
Right.
You know, so if you focus on what's working, every once in a while, it's not all the time, but every once in a while, you're going to hit a home run. But you're never going to hit that home run when you're focusing on what doesn't work. And you know, the same thing with delegation.
And you know, this is very, very similar to, in a sense, what I teach all my clients in the very, very early stages of our interactions together. In fact, in the first session, in first DOS session that I conduct with them. So one of the things that I tell them is that they have to all, and I'm talking to a leadership team of an entrepreneurial business, they have to all become good parents to that business. And the technique that you just described, it's also very similar to what constitutes, at least in my view, a great parenting technique, you know, to emphasize, to work the weaknesses, but to really emphasize the child's strengths, so they can actually really flourish in that. But I like to shift a little bit the conversation away from delegation to the kind of a next subtopic here, to this very generous notion of operational irrelevance, and to talk about businesses with an eye towards the end of a person's owning the business, whatever that end is. So I've heard you talk about keeping a business or having a, or shaping a business to always be kind of sale ready, regardless of whether you anticipate us to sell the business or not in any, you know, foreseeable future. What do you mean by that?
Well, sale ready basically means you have created a business somebody else wants to own.
Right.
I mean, that's the easy definition. Mm-hmm. And businesses that somebody else wants to own are by definition what I call a personally and economically sustainable business. And the five areas of sustainability, these are broad areas, by the way. There's lots of subsets that go within there. But those five areas, if you pay attention to those five areas, and actually, if you even pay attention to just four areas, because if you pay attention to, you know, your values becoming operationally irrelevant, being systematized, and having recurring revenue, the profit piece will actually take care of itself. But you do those five things, you're going to have a business that somebody else is going to want to own. Now, you may decide not to sell it. You know, I've gone through this with several businesses, and I remember one of my first was a friend of mine. I used to be in Young President's Organization back when I had my vending company, and one of my first clients I had owned a large paper company. He was involved, and he wanted to really sell his business. And I said, well, the first thing we need to do, Brian, is you got to make yourself operationally irrelevant. So we worked on that. We made him operationally irrelevant. I went back to him and said, well, Brian, it looks to me like your business is ready to be sold. And he looked at me like I was crazy and said, what? I don't want to sell my business. I'm having way too much fun. Mm-hmm. I'm not working especially hard. My business is making a ton of dough. Why the heck would I ever want to sell it? And this has happened to me over and over and over as I've helped people reach operational irrelevance as part of getting their business sale ready. Now, at some point, you're going to transfer your business.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes those things are capped with a phone call. You know, in my case, I had that phone call from said, well, you have a very serious form of cancer, and we're going to start chemo tomorrow.
Right.
Well, that's sort of, those are the phone calls that might say, well, maybe it's time for me to leave my business. I didn't happen to do that, and that's a different story. But if my business was sale ready, I could have easily gotten that into a sales process. But if it wasn't sale ready, I'm going to be looking at 3 to 5 years before my business is ready to be transferred. And the truth is, most businesses are never transferred. They're liquidated.
Exactly. So we have just a few seconds before the next break. So I'd like to actually continue this right after the break a little bit, and then kind of the wrap up with a few other questions. But you know, continue this conversation about other aspects of operationally relevant. So let's take a couple of minutes of a break, and we'll be right back.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serge Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
If you're looking for an in-depth, thought-provoking discussion about leadership, tune in to Bernard E. Robinson's The Leadership Forum, Making an Impact Through Effective Leadership. Each program provides an intelligent, conversational experience about leadership from Bernard, his guests, and you. If you're interested in improving the quality of leadership in your organization, listen live every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time and 8 a.m. Pacific Time for the Leadership Forum on the Voice America Business Channel.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Serge Samel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Serge Samel again, your host, and I'm sitting here with Josh Patrick talking about the secrets of operational irrelevance. So you talk about these five components: the values, the operational irrelevance, the systematization, the recurring revenue, and the profitability parts. So where do business owners' personal value or values fit in with creating a business where they are operationally irrelevant?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's where it all starts, in my opinion. Right. And the truth is, most business owners do this about as poorly as it could possibly be done. Mm. They don't do it. They don't talk about it. They don't even really think about what their values are. We happen to have a very in-depth values process we put our people through, which is called the AVI values process. And it is very in-depth. It's about a 3-hour, 4-hour conversation after they do an instrument where we really dig into what their personal values are. And then they need to take those personal values and they need to translate them into their companies. Now, here's the truth about values. Your business has values. Whether you articulate your values or not is really the big deal, because if you don't, everybody in your business is going to make up what the values are. And they may or may not be what your values are. So it's really important to not only figure out what the top five values are that motivate you, you also need to have clarifying statements around those values so people understand what you mean. You know, when I do workshops, I have this game I used to play. It's called the picnic game. I actually stole this from Tony Robbins back in the old days before Tony became Anthony. And he would, you know, put us in groups of 8 and 10 and say, okay, I want you to write down the first 10 words that comes in your mind about the word picnic, because everyone would know what a picnic was. And then we would get here and compare our lists, and we would say how many people all had the same amount of words on their list. So what do you, and I've done this probably 100, 150 times with groups now. How many words do you think everybody in that 8 to 10 group all have in common out of 10?
Three.
Usually it's zero or one.
Hmm.
So if you're not clarifying what a values word is, for me, for example, personal responsibility is a really big deal. And when I say what's personal responsibility, it's where you're not blaming and justifying when things don't go the way you want.
Right.
Okay, so now people know, hey, if I'm blaming or justifying, I'm obviously not being personally responsible. In fact, I got this out of another seminar I went to back in the early 80s. We used to call this above the line or below the line behavior. If you're above the line, you're being personally responsible. If you're below the line, you're not being personally responsible. So not only do values tell the world what your business is about, but it also gives you tools to help people do the right things in your business. Now, again, one of the EOS things is a Jim Collins statement, right person, right seat.
Right.
Values do not speak to right seat. Is a person doing the right job? But it does speak very clearly to, is this somebody who should be in your company in the first place?
Absolutely.
Do not exhibit the values you think are important. They can't stay in your company no matter how technically competent they are.
You know, because one of my clients, actually this the visionary in one of my client companies, has this line that I learned from him, actually, and I repeat it to anybody who cares to listen, which is he has a 100-person mortgage company. He says, you know, we are not our process. Our product is our values. That's what we sell.
That's a pretty good statement. And if his values are clearly articulated, and he allows his people to say no to potential customers, he's going a long way towards building a great business.
They are very, very an excellent EOS company. So yes, that's true. Exactly. That's where actually that statement kind of emerged out of, from the experience of actually seeing how important not only discovering your core values, but actually using them in how you shape your organization, how you shape your customer base, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, one of my favorite authors is a guy named Patrick Lencioni, who's written a zillion books. Most of them are business fables, but he wrote a nonfiction book called The Advantage. And in there, he talks about four types of values. And the four types are core values, accidental values, permission to play values, and aspirational values.
Right.
And a lot of times, business owners will make their aspirational values, which are values they would like to have be true, and pretend they're core values. And that's always a mistake, because when you do that, your employees know that you're lying and you lose legitimacy with them. So you have to be very, very clear. And it's okay to say, hey, one of our five really important values is an aspirational value. And here's specifically what we're doing to make it a core value. A core value is true 100% of the time. A permission to play value would be 90 or 95% of the time. And an aspirational value is something you want to be a core value, and it's not there yet. So it's important to know what type of value you're talking about as you're doing this value clarification, value process within your company. It's always the first place I start, and although no business owner believes me, it's the most important thing we do.
Absolutely. I so agree with that. So speaking about Patrick Lencioni, which by the way, he's one of my favorite business authors. And speaking about also about the over 2,000 books or business books that you read in your career, I want to give you really, really quickly an opportunity to give our listeners a gift via two quick recommendations. So can you quickly recommend a book? It doesn't have to be a business book that they should read. And also maybe an app that you found particularly useful, just in a few seconds.
Well,
It's tough. I know.
This is going to fit in well with you. I think that one of the best business books of all times is Traction by Gino Wickman, which is the founder of EOS.
Absolutely.
And if you own a private business, you need to not only read it, but implement EOS in your company. You're going to be much happier and better for that. An app. Any of the Getting Things Done app, GTD, I find that almost all private business owners are terrible personal time management people. Mm-hmm. And adopting Getting Things Done through any, it could be Things, it could be Todoist, it could be OmniFocus, any of those things. Adopt and use Getting Things Done and use an app to do it with.
So
you'll become much more efficient.
Absolutely. So if people want to reach out to you about business ownership or delegation or anything else, actually, Josh, what's the best way to reach you?
It's very simple. Just email me at jpatrick@askjoshpatrick.com. And if they'd like to get my free, I actually have a free 1-hour CD audio course. And all they have to do is text the word sustainable to 44222. That's the word sustainable to 44222. They're going to get a link. They give me their address, and I email them the CD.
Thank you so much, Josh, for being my guest here. And thank you, our listeners, for spending this precious hour with us. If you found what you heard on this show helpful, point your business friends and colleagues to Operationally Speaking. And if you listen to us on our webpage at voiceamerica.com, don't hesitate to click on the banners to get your free consultation on how to turn your business vision into reality right now. Or send me a request at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. You'll be surprised by what's possible, and I promise you'll never regret it. So see you again next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern or 12 noon Pacific. And until then, make it an operationally sound and very, very happy week. Goodbye.
Thank you for tuning in to Operationally Speaking. Be sure to join your host, Sergio Semel, for another great program 1 week from today. We're live every Friday at 12 noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Business Channel. In the meantime, you can reach Sergio for additional questions at 1-617-731-3132 or by email at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that is os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Enjoy your upcoming weekend, and may you and your business make it a smooth and successful week.